Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 181. I would like to thank our returning sponsor, Squarespace.com. It's a fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. All the kids are doing it now. Go make a blogging thing. For a free trial and 15% off your new account for 6 months, you can go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code NERDIST3. It's totally easy to use UI. If you want to create or manage a website or blog, doesn't matter what level of experience you are. If you think you're more awesome than you actually are, that's fine. They're not going to damage your ego by telling you how to do stuff you don't know how to do. They have online resources and special support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now they offer free live classes to help with all levels of experience to get more comfortable with Squarespace. Check out their schedules at workshops.squarespace.com. So right now, go get your free account. There's no credit card needed. Just try it out and start building your website. Then if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code NERDIST3 and get 15% off for 6 months. That's squarespace.com. Use the offer code NERDIST3. And now the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 181, with the hilarious and tall Rob. Wriggle.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I've been forgetting what day it is lately.
Doesn't matter anymore.
It really doesn't.
Really? What happened?
They all bleed. No,
we stopped time.
We did?
Yeah.
So it's not bladder day anymore?
Not anymore.
We're stuck in a time burp.
You made that day up.
I did not.
Stop making up days, Jonah.
Flu's day?
Flu's day's not a day. That's the day you would buy at IKEA.
That's a chick.
Flu's day? Yeah. I've come across her many times.
Rob Riggle, you're here in our podcast studio.
Are we recording?
Yeah, that just happened.
Hey, that's maybe pull the mic up a little bit closer to your mouth.
We just tripped into it.
Here, I'll pull this, and then you can... There you go.
Look at that.
Don't treat him like a child,
I'm
Matt.
I'm sorry. Rob probably doesn't remember, but I fixed his computer once at the Grove.
You did?
Yeah.
Matt used to work at the Genius Bar.
Yeah, your shit was broken. White MacBook.
Whoa, that was back in the day, the white MacBook.
Yeah.
Did you make it a point to just always fix comedians'
laptops? No, I just, honest to God, called it by whatever the fuck was up.
Did Rob have a bunch of pictures of his dick on his hard drive?
Yeah,
tons and tons. I meant to compliment you before, but your dick is beautiful.
Thank you. I don't get much compliments on size or girth, but beauty.
Sometimes it's just
a shapely dick.
Yeah, no one ever says, like, you have a really handsome dick. Like, handsome is like a classy word to describe.
I'm not even kidding. I've actually had my penis described as handsome and beautiful.
Really?
But not, I mean, no one, it's not, I don't know what. I'm not going to talk about the size, but they've said it's beautiful.
My dick has been described by as quirky and with a good sense of humor.
Oh, he sure tries.
Yeah, they learn to love it.
Your dick is very funny.
Your dick has a great personality.
It does.
But let's talk for a second about all the starving children in the world.
No, thank you for fixing my computer.
You're welcome.
What was wrong with it?
I'm trying to remember.
I think I forgot. I couldn't get
a password
to come
or something like that. Yeah,
it was the power button, I believe.
Yeah, that happens.
Top case.
Did you unplug the computer and then plug it back, count to 10, and then plug it back in?
I love how they all the geniuses, not you, but
all the
geniuses are like, well, did you turn it off and hit Command X42? And you're like, well, no, why would I do that?
But that wouldn't do anything. Command X42, Jesus Christ.
What if it did?
That would be awesome.
There must be some sort of a weird Easter egg that Apple has planted in their computers that it's just a certain set of keystrokes.
Well, you know, ESPN's website for the longest time. If you put the Capcom code in,
that was
it.
For the unicorn. Longest time. That was just for an afternoon, and then they shut the site down.
No. That was up for a while.
Really?
We can't argue with the guy who actually goes to ESPN.com.
That's true.
You would put the
unicorns.
In. Yeah, and the unicorns would come out, and the rainbows and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Pretty sweet,
up,
right?
Up, down, down.
Guys, I just wanted to share with you the tweet that I just got during the show. Yeah, I just did Attack of the Show, as did you. Good job.
Thank you.
I just reviewed this shitty Sony tablet.
Oh, so that didn't get a 5 because you said shitty.
It's 2.5, and I rounded it up to a 3.
Okay.
But I said something about ice cream sandwich. Yeah. Somebody tweeted at me, "Yeah, your fat ass eats a lit of ice cream sandwiches, tubby tubby."
Fat ass.
Tubby tubby was fucking hilarious to me.
Did they hashtag it tubby tubby?
Tubby tubby.
Is it hashtag tubby tubby?
No. I just wrote this is a no kidding tweet that funny. I just got from. I got this tweet just from the tag of the show.
Okay. All right.
And the guy said, "He said, you own a windowless van that sells cotton candy out of the, or has a cotton candy machine in it."
And
first of all, how would he know that?
Please tell me it was the same guy.
I gotta find it now because I was shocked. I was like, okay, so I guess you're what? Are you alluding that I'm a child molester? I don't get
it. No. You're convenient with your cotton candy.
You're a cotton candy enthusiast who likes who lives a mobile lifestyle.
Is that what you took away from me?
Yeah, who lives a mobile. Yeah, okay. It's just
he gets to sleep in the van because there's not too many windows. It's nice.
I took
and
more
dark.
Of an insult, I guess.
No,
I also,
it's
by the
very
way,
practical.
I responded to this guy and he said, respect. Most people don't respond to hate.
Oh.
Most people don't respond.
So he admitted he was hating
you. I don't. That's not true. Everyone responds to hate.
Yeah.
The world responds to hate.
Well, he just meant no one writes back.
Yeah.
And then his other. Sorry, I forgot that he simplified it into just Twitter.
Everyone knows Rob Riggle owns a windowless van with the sweet cotton candy machine inside.
Everyone knows that.
Sweet. It's a
well, that's common knowledge.
I guess. I don't,
but I think he means like it's like, hey, Rob, that's a real sweet cotton candy machine you got in there.
Is that a euphemism?
I think they
it's
mean
just like it's a really good. It's as out of other cotton candy machines.
Mine's really sweet.
It's really sweet.
Well, thanks, man.
I think using sweet, it's not like he didn't use rapey. Like it just, you know
a
what I mean? Like
cotton candy
a
machine.
Rapey cotton. That's, wait, so does that mean you're raping the machine or the machine rape? I don't know what how rapey fits
it's
in, but
the most bizarre.
That is a very bizarre. I think he means you're badass. I mean, that sounds pretty badass.
It's just an unusual way of going about it.
We're going to spin it. Hashtag tubby tubby.
Because he could have just cut to the chase.
His marketing plan worked. You would have read right over that. You would have walked right over it if he had just said, hey, you're cool.
Yeah.
But the fact that he said you're cool by saying you have a windowless.
Oh, no. Let's not promote that. Because then now the only tweets I'll get back are people going, hey, douche nozzle.
Know you're reading this.
I know you're reading this because I got your attention. Go blow your mother.
Yeah.
The fuck?
Thing is like if someone ever says a tweet at you saying, hey, you're really funny, you just go, what do you fucking know? that's the initial reaction.
You get mad at him?
Yeah.
You just get mad at everyone who says anything to you on Twitter.
That's true.
You just got to come out swinging.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm just glad I earned his respect.
I turned into a block machine. I really do.
Who gives you shit, though? I feel like you're one of those guys that everyone likes.
Please. People all the time. I said something the other day, and people unloaded on me. Oh, I was on ESPN.
Okay.
And it was before Peyton had made his decision to leave the Colts or whatever, and they said, Riggle, you're a Chiefs fan. You know, would you want him on the Chiefs? And I said, well, it's not going to happen, so I'm not worried about it, so I'm going to stick with my man Matt Castle. And you would have thought I had set off Chiefs fans and Colts fans going, stick to comedy, you jerk off. You don't know what you're talking about. I mean, just unloading. I was like, what the fuck? Comedy.
You know, it's nice to be told to stick to comedy, though, as opposed to doing comedy and like, maybe you should go into maybe you should go into drafting sports.
Listen,
people.
I had a year of Matt Castle. It was delightful. We were 11 and 4 and 11 and 6.
Yeah, I don't know what any of those words are.
Completely, but
those are numbers, Chris.
For what?
Scores.
As for what?
Oh no,
Nerdist.
Chris,
what?
Really, nothing.
I don't know.
They pretend to not know.
I don't know
sports.
I really don't know sports. It's. I feel like my parents were pretty cool with it early on because they're both like my mom actually calls in like sports talk radio.
Dang,
she's hardcore.
She is a huge baseball fan. It's insane.
She loves everything: baseball, college basketball, football. She knows everything about everything.
That sounds like my kind of lady, because those are all the sports I dig the most.
She's not bad looking either.
Please
she
fuck my mom.
She's not bad looking.
Rob,
I'll tell you that.
Please.
Photo me up.
Please.
Photo me up.
This whole podcast is just I'm trying to find a mate for my mom.
It's been a long time.
Rob, you did the podcast. Why didn't you come over for dinner?
177
mom,
episodes.
Negligee again.
Mom. This is a lovely pod roast. Mrs. Hardwick. I turn into just the grossest big Italian. Goomba Guido from the street.
Mom, please. Hey, Chris, don't sass your mother.
Hey, she's a classy lady, Chris. You watch that mouth.
she keeps the bathtubs and the old knob clean. You know what I mean?
Wait.
Rob, what happened?
Oh, I got it.
Yeah, Rob.
Rob, what happened to you?
You're so normal.
You really get into character.
I thought bathtubs was a metaphor for something, and then I realized you were actually talking about keeping bathtubs clean.
Yeah.
And blowing you.
Yeah. I mixed the metaphor.
Chris was joking around about his mom blowing Grob.
Who's Grob?
No, blowing Rob.
Okay.
It's the fucking end of the day. Give me a break.
Sometimes I put word at the beginning of grit, too. Drona.
It's very Slovakia of you. Yeah.
When I'm
retired,
when I'm really retired, I'll throw it right before.
Yeah. No, the G didn't belong there. There was a G at the end of the previous word.
I like to think of all words as having a silent G that it just hasn't been pronounced yet.
Yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gnome.
And then when you're tired.
Gnarly.
Gary Gnu. Where'd you grow up, Rob Riggle?
I grew up in Kansas City.
What?
Yeah, for reals.
In the flatlands?
Yes. Well, Eastern Kansas is still pretty hilly. Okay. Western Kansas is as advertised.
Yeah.
Nothing but wheat. But hey, we feed the world, don't we, guys?
Yay!
We sure do. We sure do. We do a lot for the world.
Hey, except for the people who are gluten intolerant or who have celiac disease. Then you don't feed any of those people.
That's a made up thing.
I didn't even know that was a disease. What did you say?
It is. It
celiac
is.
Disease?
Celiac disease. Very serious.
Wow.
People
who
can't process. Yeah, they can't process wheat and flour.
How do you get it?
You don't catch it.
I think you catch it.
I don't think you catch
it. You can get it at public bathrooms for what I heard.
You're not supposed to lick toilet seats.
Okay.
You're not supposed to fuck wheat. That's how you get it.
Well,
we have a lot.
Fuck wheat was my favorite SNL character.
Fuck wheat, yeah. It was really great.
Your favorite SNL character.
Yeah, fuck wheat.
Not your favorite Little Rascal.
No, fuck wheat. Because it had to be a parody, didn't it?
I guess so.
I'm not going to talk about child fucking wheat.
Do you guys just sit here and look at people go by?
All the time. Sometimes it's Joan Rivers.
That's true. That's
you guys sit at the same time.
We
you
did.
Guys have to totally make out now.
Oh, my God.
Nah, it's with Joan Rivers.
With Joan Rivers. Oh, boy.
So she walked by. Does she terrify you when she walks by? Or?
She waved.
She does?
She was very nice. She was very
nice.
Yeah.
The giddiness of seeing her superseded the fact that she looks like a mannequin.
That would be terrifying. Yeah.
What kind of mannequin, though?
Oh, a shitty mannequin that looks like Joan Rivers.
Okay, well, she's definitely never going to come on now.
Have you seen the
we just lost Joan Rivers,
guys.
Lost Joan. Nice
lost Joan. Call them back and tell those cocksuckers I'm not going to do that fucking...
She would come in here and hook and jab, though, with you guys.
She would.
She would blast out.
If anything, I helped our cause of getting her on.
You sure did.
Yeah.
You've challenged her.
The gauntlet's been dropped, Joan, if you're listening.
Yeah. And then Rob's going to be there, because so far we know that Rob has a windowless van and makes cotton candy, and he fucks
people's moms. Sweet cotton candy maker.
Yeah, sweet kind of candy maker.
This is what I wanted to convey to you guys. I'm glad we're getting it all out.
Okay, you're here to promote the sweet cotton candy maker. Rob Riggle's sweet cotton candy maker. On Amazing Discoveries.
No, have to
I fucking loved Amazing Discoveries.
There we go.
Holy He's a child.
You're a giant toddler.
Somebody woke him up. Yeah. Somebody woke him up.
Say something
British
else
guy.
That you might like. Evel Knievel.
He jumped over shit.
There we go.
Yeah, there it is.
Rob, you are one of
those.
Oh,
we're just skipping Amazing Discoveries.
Okay, what do you want to talk about?
No, let's go back to you, Matt.
Amazing Discoveries should have its own infomercial for Amazing Discoveries.
Oh, God, I would watch that.
They're on YouTube.
All day.
The most unironic show ever made, Amazing Discoveries.
He had sweaters, that guy. Great sweaters.
Lots of them.
Oh.
Anyway, back to
Great sweaters.
You're one of those crossover guys where you are a comedy guy who also happens to be athletic, which fascinates me. Fascinating. Most people are comedians because they're introverted and they attack themselves and they are ostracized and they don't do sports.
It's just you and Joe Rogan, pretty much, right?
You guys are you carrying the...
I guess.
You're carrying the torch.
Wow.
But you were a Marine?
Yes. I'm still in the Marine.
You're still a Marine.
Still in the
reserves, right?
Yeah,
or
today. I'm going to retire this summer, but
you are going to retire this summer.
Wow. So how long?
22 years.
Do you get the pension at that point?
Nope.
When he's 60, right?
When he's 60. Yeah.
That's my dad waiting for that pension. He was waiting, and he got it.
Did you ever get stationed at the Kaneohe Marine Base?
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I didn't. But I've heard good things. I always put it on my list. because you can put down your three top preferences.
Oh, really?
Of where you would like to be stationed. It's basically just to make give you a warm and fuzzy. The brains have no intention of sending you wherever you want to go.
I feel like those are the three places they will not send you.
Yeah, exactly.
You should put.
I put Marine Corps. I put K Bay all the time. Yeah. Kanoe Bay. I put Pacific Command because that was headquartered out of Honolulu or Pearl.
Yeah.
And then I would put Marine Corps Europe, you know, maybe get an embassy, say London or something like that. And no.
None.
No, I got North Carolina.
No, you.
Ooh, see the world. Join the Marines.
Yeah. Liberia, Albania, Kosovo, and Afghanistan.
You got to put Afghanistan first.
No, wait. At the time, yeah, sure.
No, because then it'll seem like, yeah, he really wants to. Yeah. So you put Afghanistan third. That's what you do.
That's a big gamble.
Yeah.
It's a big gamble.
But you went to Kosovo when the shit went down.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. But to answer your question, to go back, when I was in high school, 8th and 9th grade, I was a late bloomer, really prepubescent. Everybody else around me shot up. Girls, everybody was bigger than me. Everybody could beat the shit out of me. That's when I went into my cave, my little man cave.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, when I started to develop my comedy and my sense of, because all I had was my George Carlin albums.
Oh,
and
wow.
All I had was my wit and my razor tongue that would keep people away from me.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't physically, girls could beat me up. And to an 8th grade boy, there's nothing worse than the thought of getting beat up by a girl.
Right.
Because that's a lifetime of humiliation. So I literally, and I remember there's this one girl who we called her a drugger. She was, you know, there's cliques. Mm-hmm. And there was a drugger clique, you know, and they were all the pot smokers and the badasses and all that stuff.
The cool kids.
Well, they weren't that cool.
No.
But anyway, but she, you know, she had like just bad acne. And she was just mean and nasty. And she'd always be like, "Where's Regal?" because she knew she could like shove me and I wouldn't shove back because if it escalated into a fight, I would have to murder her.
Oh yeah.
Because I couldn't lose.
Yeah.
and even if I did fight her and win, I didn't win. Do you see what I'm saying? So I would literally hide in the boys' bathroom.
It's the worst murder defense.
You could have just, you should have just like scratched a zit off her face just to like, you know?
Yeah, well, it's all fun and games, but she would grab me by the neck and like wring my neck in front of everybody and people thought it was the funniest thing ever. So anyway, so the first part of high school sucked ass.
Cut to your wedding.
So then in 10th grade, puberty hit with a vengeance. And I grew and I started playing sports and I got out of my shell and I was in drama and I was on the radio and TV station and it was awesome. So the second half of high school was awesome. The first part was shit. And I think that's where I started to develop though my sense of humor was as a defense mechanism.
Yeah. That's a great story I think Tom Wilson said the same thing.
Yeah.
Tom Wilson kind of had the same thing. He was like, maybe he didn't shoot up.
You said he was a late bloomer, though, where then, like, he came into, so like, once he got big, he got into sports.
You got just enough of the having to be introverted and protect yourself from everyone.
Right.
Yeah. Then nature.
Yeah. Then nature. And then literally, it happened the summer before my sophomore year. When I came back to school, people really didn't recognize me. I grew like 4 inches. I got my braces off. I got a haircut.
Was it
my
like
face
when
actually hardened? I think it was still soft and molding when I was in.
You still had separate
junior
skull.
High. Yeah,
it's like that first day. It's like that first day Teen Wolf went to school as the Wolf.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, "What the fuck?
Yeah, why exactly. would he even go as the Wolf? Would he stay home?
Someone would have shot him on sight. On sight,
and not been blamed.
Not at all.
He would have been. No. Should have been celebrated, but half of the population would have celebrated.
No one would have been okay with that.
All the kid, he shows up and all the kids go, "I bet that guy could get us a keg of beer. I bet."
Never. No.
The hairy guys always got beer in high school.
The second,
I remember there was a kid with like dreads and a full beard and it was a sophomore and everyone was just like, "What the fuck? How did that happen?"
The man child always got, I remember we had guys like that were sophomores and they had like full, thick, robust mustaches.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, "God damn, that's good."
Yeah.
And sure enough, you just walk in out. And get beer. And you're like, but then you had to befriend them a little bit.
Which, oh, that's a
shame.
But
then they would become popular out of like for no reason but for that.
But he was usually the guys, the man child were always the creepy dudes. They were always spooky, but they got the beer, so what are you gonna do?
Yeah, exactly.
You have choices in life.
Yeah.
The kids who look like Joe Cocker when they're 16.
That's right.
They don't age well.
That's right.
Those poor fucks don't age well. They peak early and fast.
Fast.
And then
not much left for him.
Yeah. I'm curious to know what made you decide to go into the Marines and how your experience with that affected, or did it affect your comedy at all? Or did it affect your confidence? Or did it? I'm curious to know how those two worlds work together.
Well, I'll try to give the quick version of what happened here. I was a theater and film major in college. But I also had my pilot's license when I was in college.
That's fucking awesome.
And so I was either going to be a waiter, which is what you when you graduate as a theater film major, or a bartender if I was lucky.
Oh.
But the Marine Corps offered me a guaranteed flight contract, so I thought I might be Top Gun.
Oh, that would be awesome.
So I went through Officer Canada school, went to the basic school, went to flight school, down in Pensacola, then off to Corpus for primary and intermediates. Got helicopters, didn't get jets, was headed back.
Then Goose died.
Yeah, when Goose died, it was too much. I was holding on too tight.
Yeah.
Hey, it wasn't your fault, man. That was just some jet wash. Shit happens.
Gotta get me back up in the sky, man. Gotta get me back on the horse. So anyway, as I got closer to getting my wings, I realized once I pinned those wings on my chest, they owned me for 8 years. And at that time, I was like, I could do the math. I was like, well, you know, by the time I got it, that's 11 years in. That's what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. I'll be a pilot in the Marines for the rest of my life. Great life, but just I didn't feel like it was my calling. So I stopped flying, became a ground officer, fulfilled my ground contract, moved to New York, and pursued comedy and acting full time.
What kind of planes did you fly?
T-34s, and then I was transitioning to H-57s, TH-57s, which are they look like network those network helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
Again, it was all because it was all in the training. I stopped before I put my wings on.
Oh, okay.
Had I pinned the wings on, who knows? I might have flown CH-53s or CH-46s or Cobra attack helicopters, or you never know. But one of the helicopter family.
Oh my God!
Wow. But I didn't do it, so I became a ground officer. And then there was a second part of your question too.
How did the Marines affect your comedy? Because like
I keep them separate. I keep those worlds totally separate.
Mentally, you keep them totally separate.
And now what I do though, like. Like anything, like the Marines are just a microcosm of our society. You know, I have their great guys and they're funny guys, unbelievable leaders, idiots.
There you go.
It's just it's a small little microcosm of our society. So, but you know, what we do is a little more heightened because we're obviously out there in harm's way and our mission is to fight battles and do those things. So it's a little different in that sense. But what I would do is, what I did draw from was like a character study, if you will. I saw a lot of alpha males. I saw a lot of arrogant ignorance, which is one of my favorite comedy games to play.
Yeah.
You know, that guy who's large and in charge, but just completely wrong-headed. And I thought that was some of the funniest stuff in the world. So I drew from people. But as far as like my life in the Marines, I was an officer, you know, and I never wanted my Marines to ever think that I didn't care about them or didn't take their lives seriously or their well-being seriously. So when I was in Marine mode, I put on my Marine hat and you wouldn't know that I did comedy ever. And then when I wasn't doing that, I was full-time Laugh Factory.
You were working at the Laugh Factory full-time. Interesting.
If you're in the military and you've been through training and seen action, is going on stage really that frightening?
Completely.
Really?
Completely. Yes. I mean, I have a combat action ribbon. I've been in four combat zones. I've been out on patrol. But it's different because you're trained for it. You're prepared for it. There's certain things you can control. It's a different kind of thing. When you get on stage, the first time I went on stage was at the Comic Strip Live on the Upper East Side.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
I did a little 5-minute set. And I remember being introduced. I remember going up there. I remember the first joke. And then I remember saying, good night. And I remember at one point saying, is this thing on? And I don't know why. And then I said, good night. And I remember people, enjoyed it. But it wasn't, it wasn't like crazy, but I do. They videotaped it. The reason I'm saying I remember is because they videotaped it. I had to go back and watch the videotape because I was so much adrenaline was coursing through my body. My neck was pulsing. Like I'm sure I looked ridiculous, but I think I just did it on autopilot. Like I wasn't connected to anything I was saying because I was absolutely terrified. Absolutely terrified.
And you really.
It's just a different kind of fear.
But then you started. I mean, at that point. You were like, yeah, I've made the right decision to not, you know, like, did you feel like the second you started doing it, like, yeah, this is what I should be doing?
No, I remember when I got off the stage, I thought I made a huge mistake.
Right.
I really did. I thought, oh God, I should have stayed in flying. Because, you know, what was I thinking? This sucks. This is painful. And I took a... When I moved to New York, the first thing I did, I didn't know what I was doing. I just didn't know. So I got there and I was like, well, I guess I do stand-up because I want to be a comedian. So I went to that Comic Strip Live and I took a little stand-up course they offered. And I'm a storytelling comedian. You know, that's what I like to do. I like to tell stories. And the teacher was very adamant about 3 jokes per minute, setup, punch, setup, punch, setup, punch. There is no other way. I don't want to hear your stories. Blah, 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 blah. So I was
like being in the fucking military.
It was a lot like that. So I did it his way, and I hated it. It felt like an uncomfortable shoe the whole time. So when I got off the stage, and after I was racked with fear and sweat, and I was like, that was more terrifying than anything I've ever done. Why did I decide to do this? And I was really depressed. And I had a friend who had a friend, who's Dave Koechner, very wonderful improviser,
amazing,
great comedian, actor. And he said, call Dave and ask, just talk to him. And
what year was this, by the way?
This would have been 96.
Was Koechner on SNL at that point?
He had just left.
Just left,
just
right.
Just left.
Okay.
So I called him and I said, hey, you know, so-and-so said, and he was expecting the call and he was a very nice guy and we had met once before. And he goes, what are you doing? He goes, good, get down to the UCB. I got some friends from Chicago who just moved out there. And they're setting up like a school and they're doing, you know, all kinds of stuff. And he goes, you got to go see their show. He goes, it's not just about stand up. There's other things. So I was like, all right. So I went down and I saw the Upright Citizens Brigade do a show called Ass Cat.
Yep.
And it was Amy Poehler, Matt Walsh, Matt Besser, Ian Roberts, and a couple of their friends like Brian Stack and Miriam Tolan and some of these great, great improvisers. And I watched them do Ass Cat. It was the most amazing. It was a revelation. I felt like the clouds parted and the sun hit me just like Belushi in the Blues Brothers. I was like, damn nasty, Jesus Christ. Because it was. It was just a wonderful moment of, that's what I want to do. This is it. That's what I want to do. And so immediately following the show, I went up to Amy. I did go up to Amy and I said, love the show, la, la, la. And then I went up to Matt Walsh and I said, how can I get involved? And he was like, well, sign up for classes and da, 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 da. So I signed up for classes and studied with them for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years and then got on a house team. And, you know, any chance I had, anything, I would go down there and do tech. I would do light and sound for other shows just to watch other performances and other shows. And anything I could do to be around the theater, I did. So about 7 days a week, I was down there doing that.
I wonder if maybe you're... And maybe this was just a predisposition that you had, but the fact that you had learned to work as a team member in the Marines might have helped you be a pretty solid improviser. Because I would assume my biggest problem with improv is that I have this impulse to make the scene about me or to try to control the scene rather than be a moving part in the scene.
Right. Well, there might be some truth to that because you know the Marine Corps is very. Very much based around teamwork and serving the bigger purpose, serving the mission. Is the Marine? That's what you know. At the end of the day, the only thing we care about is mission accomplishment. And when you do improv, a lot of what you do, it's not about coming out and getting your one joke in. If you come off the wall to join a scene, it's to serve whatever the game is.
Yeah.
To heighten the game, to give that crazy person more ammunition and information. So yeah, and I liked it too because I could get into a character, and be a character.
Yeah,
which I enjoyed that a lot too. So.
And when did you start getting? When did you kind of start breaking through? And you know, because now, everyone knows. Like people are on the Rob Riggle train now. Like they know. But for you, it probably, you know, what was that? 96, 97. So you know, like it was like a good 12, 13 years. Did you feel before you started really kind of?
Oh yeah, well that's you know people talk about overnight successes and stuff, and Will Ferrell was like he said to me he goes yeah it takes about 10 years to make an overnight success
yeah
and he's right I mean it takes that long it takes a long time I teach classes at the UCB from time to time I'll do workshops just on weekends every now and then and the number one thing I get these young actors and young comedians coming in and they're all like I can see it in their eyes I can feel it it's palpable. They just want to do it now.
Yeah.
They don't want to do the whole process.
Put the work in.
They want the shortcut. Give me the shortest way from here to the A-list.
That's like, you know what though? That's necessary because it will weed out the people who don't belong. Because if you you know how unrewarding it can be for so long.
Yeah.
Not unrewarding, but just rewarding in the sense of like, I got up tonight, but not, you know, I'm not famous.
Right.
But I'm doing this because I have to do this.
Yeah. It's a long, painful struggle. And if you don't know that going in, you're setting yourself up for failure.
And it's very easy to fall off, you know, those when you haven't worked for like a year or two.
There was many times I thought about quitting.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it was around 2000, the end of 2000. I was like, I've plateaued. I can't keep doing this. I've got a wife. I've got, you know, other dreams in my life that I want to accomplish, you know, like having children or whatever. And I can't afford to have children because I can't rub two pennies together.
Right.
We live in a 350 square foot studio apartment. You know, we don't have a kitchen, for Christ. I don't have a pan. And you question, you really question, you know, what you're doing.
The city's your living room. Don't worry about it.
That's what it makes sense.
But there's a weird thing that happens, I think, with people who have the comedy gene where you beat yourself up at night and then something happens when you wake up the next morning. You're like, I have to perform tonight. Like, you don't even really question it.
But that's what I'm talking about. Like, when I'm talking about like a calling
or
a real passion. Because when I was flying, I enjoyed it. It was fine. But when I would go out at night with my friends in flight school, all night they were talking with their hands and talking about that day's flight, talking about tomorrow's flight, like, oh, we're doing a foreign flight tomorrow, or we're doing aerobatics, or it's going to be awesome, and da-da-da-da.
We were inverted. Bullshit!
Yeah. Sorry. And then I'd be like, anybody want to pick up girls? Anybody want to do that? No? Nobody? Like, I could take it or leave it, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
You need to be really if you're flying off a ship at night with a bunch of Marines in the back, you need to be passionate about it.
Right.
Yeah. So I was like, but what am I passionate about? And that's when I started really asking myself, and comedy and acting was the thing that was always there. So that's what I decided that was my calling.
Did A Few Good Men ruin it for everyone? Is it really Unicorn Country God?
No.
Okay.
No. That was actually, I think A Few Good Men was actually a play written for stage back in the 60s when Cuba was an issue.
Right.
And back when things were a little more Cold War, like for real, we could all go to nuclear war.
Right.
And all die very soon.
Right.
So it was a lot more intense, but that is Hollywood's version.
I'm sure they don't. I'm sure the Marine Corps doesn't really appreciate that. Hey, no. Maybe they like the shout out, but that's probably about as far as
the
it goes.
Shout out.
I mean, listen, I entertained that. You know, anyone when you're in college and you kind of, you know, I knew I wanted to do something in comedy, but at the same time, you know, the previous generation always hammered into our heads, like, you have to have a career and you have to.
Oh, absolutely. You know. I think that's a big part of maybe why I did what I did. And another reason, instead of good, you know, I've thought about that. Right after college, should I have just gone to New York and gone for it?
Yeah.
But I didn't. I spent all my 20s in the Marines.
Well, whatever the path that you took worked.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, you know, like it was
a different path, but yeah.
It was a different path. Maybe it wouldn't have worked out the other way. You don't know. You had to, you know, you had to go through what you went through to be in the right place, right, to the headspace. But, you know, I remember being in college and I was a super skinny, wimpy kid, and you'd kind of walk by the recruitment table and go, ugh, and you'd have those like Bart Simpson flashes of you, like with fucking rippling muscles, like on a beach with like planes flying over, like, hey boys, you know, the water's fine.
That's right.
And then just like 20, you know, 20 or 50 push-ups.
Right.
And
I had an aversion to the Marines, especially just because I lived in the town next to K-Bay. It seemed, and I had friends, I made friends like later in high school that like were like older guys that were into punk, and so they would come off and I would meet them at record stores and stuff like that. But then there was like most of the guys that would just kind of, it was like I was a townie and there were these college kids like riding around their truck just looking for fights.
Oh, God.
And
so the Marines?
Yeah. And like before I met like some of my friends who were just like, you know, there's cool guys, and there was a bowling alley on that base, so sometimes they would take us in and then we'd hang out with their cool Marine friends.
Right.
But then there would just be like, you know, a few lanes down, just like these guys from the South that would just ruin the night.
Yeah. I would have just joined for the deals on toothpaste at the PX. That's what I would have joined.
Is that?
I'm telling you what, Matt's right, guys.
Wait a minute, really? Did I make a mistake?
The PX deals are off the charts.
Is it too late? It's not too late,
my
right?
Dad's
flip flops. You need shower flip flops.
Yeah, always.
Yeah. But I'm cut rate prices, no tax.
I don't like to step on things with my feet.
He still tells me about the PX deals because he gets a flyer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And they're not even that great anymore. It's so sad.
Yeah.
So sad. Because that's always one of the selling points, like, no tax. Like, that's awesome. That's amazing.
Yeah, we have our own gas stations.
Yeah, and it's not, it's like, average crap at still average prices, but no $1.50 tax on whatever you bought. It's like, give me a break.
And the BX has always seemed like the most small town market too.
Oh,
when you
insane.
Walk in, you're like, am I somewhere else completely?
My dad How much selection is there? There's nothing.
My dad got this MP3 player that I couldn't figure out how to use, and he's like, I was like, where did you get this? He's like, the PX.
Yeah, it's an MP3 player.
That's it.
So, you still keep in contact with any of your buddies from the Marines?
Absolutely. And
they must love seeing you up on there. You're such a likable guy. They must love seeing their buddy.
The Marines. I mean, whenever I see them, they're always pretty receptive, and we always chat it up. And the higher ups don't have a clue who I am. They could care less.
They haven't seen any of the movies?
No, they don't, and they don't care either. They're like, whatever, you're. Lieutenant, just go over there. Shut up. Do what you're told, All right. Uncle Sam is a really good way of letting you know who you are.
Right.
There's like no special deals. I'm just Lieutenant Colonel Riggle. Sit down and shut up.
Have you been doing any kind of USO stuff or any like entertaining?
I did. When I was on The Daily Show, I went to John and I said, can I go over to Iraq? And he looked at me like, he's like, you want to go to Iraq? Because it was the summer of 2007, which was the absolute pinnacle of violence over there. And I said, yeah, let me go over there and I'll file some stories for The Daily Show and I'll put together a USO show and we'll entertain the troops and it'll be a nice package and it'll be great. And he said, all right, if you want to do it, go for it. So I went and recruited Paul Scheer and Rob Hubel, two of my UCB improv bros, and Horatio Sands,
nice,
an old buddy from SNL. And I got those three to say yes, and then we put together a little stand-up, a little sketch, a little improv, kind of a nice little show about an hour long, and then we went over there and we went to Iraq and we went to six different forward operating bases. So we went all over the country, these little tiny outposts, and we would do our shows at night because it was so hot. It was August of 2007, and it would be up to 125 during the day. And at night when we did our shows, it would get down to around 109, 110.
Jesus.
At night.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. But that was the only time we could do it. Otherwise, everybody would pass out. Nobody could watch it.
Yeah.
Comedy doesn't work that well in heat.
Not in the searing desert.
All the shows were outdoor for the most part.
Outdoor, well, you have a lot of things working against you for these comedy shows. Number one, you're in a battle zone. And it's daytime and it's hot.
Yeah. So, but we did. We went over and we did show. We'd land in a new base. We'd get out. We'd spend all day with the troops. We'd have lunch with them. We'd, just hang with them. And then at night, we would do the show. Then after the show, we'd hang out and play basketball or whatever they wanted to do. If they wanted to show us where they worked, we'd go see where they worked,
Fucking makes me love Paul Scheer even more. Like, he's just, like, such a likable, hey, do you want to go do comedy shows in Iraq? Yeah, sure, man, whatever.
Yeah, he's the best.
I like the idea of Horatio being out there, too.
And Horatio, too, yeah. This is before he got skinny.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was, he was out there, and he was relentless. He was pushing. And then the next morning, you get on a helicopter, go to the next one.
Right.
And so we were over there about 10 days, and then and we came back.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Was there any sense along the way of, because we had Graham Elwood on the podcast and Graham did a bunch of USO tours. He did a bunch of tours at the bases and, he said he kind of went into this mode of like, we could get shot down, but not really.
There's always that thought in the back of your head, or you hear about helicopter crashes all the time.
Was it trained out of you, or do you just naturally like, well, whatever happens, happens?
Yeah. Whatever happens, happens. There's a lot of things you control, a lot of things you can't control.
Yeah.
So.
That's what it is. That's what it is about you, that sort of natural confidence that I think that people respond to, as opposed to the rest of us who are like, I think I have a rash. I don't think I'm going to make it. I think I just had a stroke. Oh, my God, you guys.
Many, many strokes.
It's weird in here, right? The air's weird in here.
Do they have egg whites?
Is this stuffy, right?
Oh, it'd be so great to have that, that whatever brain would be so great.
But you can have that to a fault, though, in life.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A rash. Yeah, fuck it. It'll work itself out.
Jonah, your hand is eaten off.
Huh?
You don't have a hand.
It'll grow back. I'm like a lizard. I've always been kind of lizard-like.
You're definitely not a lizard.
It's physically capable.
I saw a movie once.
For a human being?
Yeah, I'm sure.
You saw a sci-fi movie.
Do your fingernails grow back?
Of course they do.
Does your hair grow out?
Yes, this.
So my hand will definitely come back.
No, it won't.
It's not made of hair.
You're talking about two different things.
It's not made of hair.
The movie you saw was a sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I don't look at labels.
Did you see Species?
Look at labels.
Was this Natasha Henstridge in this movie?
It's body parts.
Oh,
I saw body parts.
Do you sort of ever kind of feel, are there any parts of you that are like, yeah, I could see myself going back to the Marines? Or do you really?
I think that's one of the reasons I stayed in the reserves.
Yeah.
Is because I never believed in this comedy and acting thing until I got a little further down the road. I was always prepared to go back on active duty if I had to support my family. That's probably one of the reasons I stayed in. When I think about it, as a matter of fact, when they didn't extend my contract on Saturday Night Live, I spent a year writing shows and trying to do stuff for NBC. But then I went up for The Daily Show, and I had to go. I made it to the final audition where you go to actually go to New York and you go in the studio with John.
What is that audition process like?
I did a bunch here. I did two auditions here in LA.
But are you reading copy? Or are you coming in with?
You do a desk piece with John, and then you do a stand up piece in front of the green screen
that you write.
No, actually, they gave you old ones.
Oh, they give you old ones.
They give you old ones. So anyway, I went in for the audition, and times were very lean at this point. And because when I was on SNL, they don't pay you anything. So right. We had to dip into our savings to live in New York, and it was just like, it was hard. And we depleted most of our money, and so this was it. I either got a job or... So when I called, when I felt like I had tanked the audition, because when I went in for the audition, John, who was incredibly nice to me, he goes, hey, do you want to take a practice read? Because I'd never used a teleprompter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that'd be great. Thank you so much. So they started rolling it, and I was doing it, at speed, kind of like game time, and I made a couple mistakes, but I covered, for him, and I improvised my way out of it, and da-da-da-da. And then I was like, oh, and he goes, oh, that was great. He goes, come on over. Let's do the desk piece. And I was like, oh, but no, I was kind of screwing around. Like, that wasn't my audition.
Oh.
And, oh, no. So now I'm panicking. Right. Going, please don't let that be the one, because I was dicking around. I wasn't, oh, shit. And he's like, come on over. So I was like, okay, well, that's done. So then I came over to the desk, and all I'm thinking about is the fact that I should be back over there doing that, and now I'm doing a desk piece.
Got in your head.
And I'm out of my head, and I'm not focused, and I'm not in the moment. So I felt like I dicked the whole thing up, to be totally honest. And I walked off. I shook his hand. He was very nice. And I remember I went back to the green room, and I was just mortified. And it was one of those things where you don't want to be seen by anybody when you screw up like that.
Because you feel so naked in the weirdest way.
Yes.
And you really just feel like...
Totally. And I just felt... sick.
Mm-hmm.
I felt sick. And I felt like that was a great opportunity. And I think I just dicked it up. And I called my wife and I apologized to her. And I said, I'm so sorry, honey, but I think I screwed it up. And don't worry. I said, don't worry. I can go back on active duty. We'll be fine. All this stuff. And I was absolutely prepared to go back on active duty. This was 2006. And I was totally ready to do it because, I had a daughter and I have a wife, I got to provide. And I sure wasn't getting it done. And so, but they came back and they said, would you like to be a correspondent on The Daily Show?
Like right then? Or
right then.
Wow. Right then?
Right then.
I
was so happy. I think I screamed, fuck yeah. And it was instantly inappropriate, but I couldn't have been any happier. So
do you think that was a trick that he did just to kind of catch you off guard to see how you just reacted?
Maybe it could have been. I felt like they did that to me at SNL.
Yeah.
I think they build that in to the
how long were you on SNL? Was it two seasons?
Just one season. Just one season.
And so you were saying you were a featured performer and then that's why I got it.
Yeah.
That's why it wasn't like a huge contract. It's like, oh, here's a little bit of money so we can try you out.
No. You have to sign a 7-year contract with them before you can even audition.
Right, okay.
So you have to make your decision right then and there. You want to be on SNL for the next 7 years. And that's if they want to keep you.
Right.
But if they want to keep you, you're going to be there for quite a while.
So what was the experience like in that season? Did you feel like this isn't working out or I'm not happy here?
No, I had a great experience. I had a wonderful time. I got on every show except for one. I was on 22 shows. I had sketches get on the air. I had original characters get on the air. But I've talked to many alumni, and they're like, "You had a killer first season by most people's standards." It was just, I think I was the only guy hired that year, mm-hmm. which is unusual. Just usually in a freshman class, you can count on 3 or 4 new guys or girls. I was the only guy hired, so it was me on a cast of 14.
Oh,
well, certain people are going to get their sketches on every week. That's sure. going to be a lock. And it was an election year, and I don't think they got quite the bounce they wanted maybe that mm-hmm. election year. And anyway, they cleaned house, and I was last one in, first one out.
Oh, man.
So, hey, stuff happened. I wouldn't trade a second of it, though. Not a second. It was a dream come true, and I'll always be grateful to the show and to Lauren for giving me that opportunity. And I'm still friends with many, many people on the cast, and it's, you know, I have nothing bad to say about it.
Well, I think, you know, The Daily Show also really allows people to develop as personalities rather than, you know, doing characters.
Right.
Which is a different, you know, I don't really do characters. So I just, when I watch SNL, I'm like, I don't think I could do that. Like The Daily Show is something I totally can wrap my mind around.
Right. Right.
So for you, it probably helped. Did you start, have you been touring as doing stand-up a lot?
Yeah. Yeah.
That must have changed overnight. Like The Daily Show.
Well, yeah. You know what happened was I still was hardcore sketch improv guy down at the UCB. And I shared an office with John Oliver.
Uh-huh.
And I would always talk John into coming down and playing, doing some improv with us. And he was game for it because he's a funny dude and he knows his way around a bit and he knows how to play. And so he would come down and he would kick ass at improv. And then he put it back in my court. And he'd go, all right, now you got to go do stand-up with me.
Wow.
And
nice.
I'd be like, okay. And so he did it. He forced me to go down. And I would go do, like, you know, 5 minutes at the Slipper Room, you know, with Seth Herzog's
show. Yeah.
And I would do 5 minutes at the Piano Room or, mm-hmm. you know, wherever he went, I'd go try to do 5 minutes. And I would start by telling a story, just one story, and try to make it as funny as possible. And then I would build on it and build on it and build on it. And eventually I built up a set.
Do you write on stage or did you write before?
I write premises and then I get on stage and flush them out through improv.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to record so I can go back and say, oh, that worked or that worked or that didn't work. What was I thinking? No wonder they didn't laugh. I get it. So anyway.
Do you just start talking and just let your brain kind of
sometimes,
find where the jokes are?
Sometimes. But, you know, it depends on the show. I only do that stuff when it's like some open mic or a free, you know, free show at the Parkside Lounge.
Well,
in the
yeah,
back
you can't
room.
Do that if people are paying like
people
25,
are paying money, yeah,
30
people are
bucks
paying
a ticket.
Money, I want to give them
oh,
the
can't?
Best show I can.
No, Matt.
Oh.
That's what I meant
Sorry,
to tell you.
Sorry, everyone who's been doing Nerdist Live.
Yeah. So I feel an obligation to try to give them, you know, I don't mess around.
Yeah.
When they pay. So.
So 21 Jump Street is the just is coming out.
Yeah, it's coming
this'll
out this
come,
weekend.
Yeah, yeah, this will come out tomorrow. We'll put this out tomorrow. So it opens today.
Yes.
How many movies did you do? Do you do like two or three a year? Or how does it? Do you get to pick now?
No, I don't get to pick.
You still
at
have
all.
To audition?
People are so, I mean, like, I've been very fortunate because I'm in The Lorax and I'm in 21 Jump Street.
Yep.
And it seems like
you're competing against yourself.
It's like, oh, everything.
Hedging all
I don't
bets.
Have another job right now. I'm out there reading scripts and auditioning, and I, you know, I don't get to pick up the phone and say, oh, I want this one. Great, come in and audition for it like everybody else, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still a working actor trying to find work. That's the way it is.
I just want to say that your character in Step Brothers fucking cracks me up every time
I
watch
dude.
It.
Thank
a heart
you.
Attack.
I appreciate that.
Pow!
Yeah. I just love the idea of denying a heart attack. It's not a thing that can happen. I'm invincible. It's not happening.
Yeah.
Every fucking
And that whole thing was improvised,
movie.
Too. That's,
yes.
That's the good thing about working with Adam and Will is that they're improvisers, too. They came up in Second City and Groundlings. And so it's in their DNA to improvise.
Yeah.
So we would always shoot a scene as written, because that's what the studio paid for.
Yeah.
And then we would do one with notes, because that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
And then it was playtime. And we would come up with the most... All we tried to do is just crack each other up. That's literally all we were trying to do. Because on that... We did one take where I had a heart attack and died. And then on the next take, I told McKay, I was like, I'm going to come back to life. But we didn't tell Will. You know? After I had my heart attack. So then I had my heart attack and I died, and he's having this whole conversation with Adam Scott, and then I go, and it was all just about trying to make each other break. And then like at the Catalina Wine Mixer, when I was describing how much I wanted to punch his face in, and, you know, break his face, or his face was annoying me.
This is one of Matt's favorite movies.
It really is.
Yeah. Well, again, all that's just us improvising, trying to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
And then, you know, McKay's off camera going, talk about this, you know, and so, okay. And, I mean, we did so many takes that, you know, no one will ever see because they're on the cutting room floor. But, like, you know, my character would come over and I would try to tell Will's character to find me a speedboat off the island. You know, because, or help me hide a body, or help me find cocaine, or just like
I've never seen Matt laugh so hard.
Yeah, just the most fucking hilarious stuff. But that's the joy of working with other improvisers and people like that, because you just it's just playtime and you just try to break each other.
Do you see a Rob Riggle starring vehicle in the? I mean, like you do enough
what
of those.
That voice?
You do.
I am Rumpelstiltskin.
If you see,
that was your Bjork.
I will
that
say this too.
Bjork.
I will say this too. On 21 Jump Street, we did a lot of improvising on 21 Jump Street as well with Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill's a great improviser.
The other Jonah, yes.
Yeah, very funny Jonah Hill. And the directors, Chris Miller and Phil Lord, kind of did a good job of setting an environment where everybody felt like they could play. You know?
Oh, good.
So there's a lot of stuff that made it in the movie that was improvised. So there's a lot of fun in the movie if you get a chance to see it.
21 Jump Street, the show that launched Richard Grieco, yeah. I always say.
Yeah,
you know,
guns.
What looks funny in the trailers for 21 Jump Street is Johnny Pemberton, good friend Johnny Pemberton.
Oh, Johnny Pemberton.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, he's a great
good,
guy.
Good guy.
Really
and you know what?
Kid.
He's. I'm trying to get him to open for me.
Yeah, that'd be good.
On some of my gigs. When we were down in New Orleans filming, so funny to say this, when we were down filming in New Orleans, you're down there forever and sometimes you don't work for days. So I called my agent. I said, give me a stand-up gig down here. You know, let me do some stand-up while we're here.
Nice.
You know, and so we got House of Blues. So Johnny opened for me at House
That's
of
great.
Blues. Yeah, it was a lot
he's
of fun.
He's also going to be in that Neighborhood Watch movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
I love the sort of, there is like a nice comedy fraternity.
Yeah.
In the, you know, it's like, and it's just like a collection of people. You go, oh, yeah, those guys. It's nice. And even though the films aren't connected, I think in our heads, they're all connected. It's like, oh, those guys are together again. This must be that's got to be a sequel of that thing. Yeah. Like, we're making connections.
It needs to be like a Judd Apatow, Adam McKay Venn diagram of sorts, and it will just be all piled up into the middle of everybody.
You can throw a David Wayne one in, too.
Yeah, you're right.
Into rotation. Is there anything that you want to do like acting wise? Do you want to do serious like super, you know?
Yeah, I mean I was a theater and film major. I studied method acting in New York for years, but I would love the opportunity. But this town sucks as far as opportunities. So I don't know if anybody will let me.
You'd be a good villain. Like a good you take someone with amazing comedy chops. And you fucking make him a villain, and it's gold.
Well, I always thought Vince Vaughn played a really good villain.
Yeah.
I always found it when he played a bad guy. I always found him to be pretty dang scary.
Yeah,
you should play a villain on Mad Men.
Not that I'm a Vince Vaughn. But I'm just saying, you're right in the sense that I think if it's done right, it can be good.
Yeah, Matt, I think a villain in Mad Men
if you were,
would be great.
Don Draper's nemesis on Mad Men, I think that'd be a villain to do.
That'd be amazing.
That would be amazing.
Or you're
That's
like
how you guys
Ron Raper. That would be his name.
Ron Raper.
Wow.
who has a van with a cotton candy maker in it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sorry, you guys
didn't able to sell it. He's able to sell it like a motherfucker.
That's right.
Sorry, you guys didn't get the Playtex account again. Ron Raper.
it's all just kind of women's products. It's all just.
maiden form. We got maiden form.
Yeah, I think it's there. I know. I would love to try drama. I would love to get a shot at leading. I would love all the things that you hope for, but it all comes down to opportunity, and I just. We'll see what happens.
Well, the film business is particularly short-sighted, because
it's really hard right now. There's nothing going on. It's just really gotten tight. I think the recession has really finally caught up to Hollywood.
All the money went into YouTube.
It all went into the Avengers. That's where all the money for movies went into.
You know, they throw a lot of money at a movie, like,
say John Carter.
John Carter.
You can.
They throw a lot of money at a movie like John Carter, and then it's like, oh, well... Yeah, that was a lot of the budget we had this year. Yeah. What are we going to do?
That was $250 million?
Well, after marketing, about $350.
Well, what did we bring in the first weekend?
$150.
Where's Johnson? Where's the guy that brought us that script? Where is he? He no longer works.
I mean, we killed fired him.
We killed fired him.
We
never see swimming with sharks. He's in a chair.
We have a clause that says you have to be alive to work here, and so when we murdered him, he was immediately terminated.
We had to pay nothing.
Immediately fired.
The highway from here to Vegas is just littered with dead Hollywood executives. That's the dumping ground somewhere outside of Barstow. Yeah.
There's just like a skeleton in the ground, like, this guy greenlit the road to Wellville.
Yeah. Like, hey, it's not so bad.
What?
Road to Wellville.
It's not so great
either. The
story
of Kellogg.
I mean, you know.
It starts with the guy that greenlit Cleopatra. Five hours and 20 minutes.
It's quirky.
Quirky.
You know, when a guy is fingering Cameron Manheim and Bridget Fonda side by side in the forest.
Yes.
Wait, I'm listening.
Yeah, yeah. You've never seen it?
No.
It's a weird movie.
Hello, Netflix.
Not on iTunes.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
Goodbye, boner.
Bye. Yeah. See you later.
Did you say goodbye to your boner?
Yeah. You.
You're such a gentleman.
I mean, why not?
See you later.
I mean, it might not be as handsome as yours, but.
See you when I wake up.
I'm at least true to it.
That's true. That. Thank you. True. Come that. Again. Yeah. So what's next? What, are you going to tour dates? You have tour dates? Are you performing on the road?
Well, I haven't done stand-up in months, but I am going to get back on the road here at the end of this month. I'm doing a show at Emory University down in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm going to be at the Comedy Works out south in Denver.
Yeah, the Suburban Club.
Yes, the Suburban Club. I did Comedy Works downtown before.
That downtown club's awesome.
I love that. The way the room's built, the low ceiling, and it's in like a pie form.
Yeah, it feels like you're in a lair. Like
just,
that,
and all that laughter just hits you like a wave, and the crowds are smart and funny and cool. And
Denver's like a space shuttle launch at your chest.
All comedy clubs should have a low ceiling. Yes. Zanies in Chicago has that shotgun low effect.
Yeah, right? but you stand. Zanies in Chicago is funny because you're super high on the stage and people are sitting at the stage like it's a bar.
Yeah,
and so you're just you're like your feet are in their faces.
Yeah. Well, Flappers in Burbank is like that where there's the stage with the.
I love the high stage. I like being kind of like more in the crowd. Talking down to people is weird. Their necks are craned up and you're just shouting down at them the whole time.
I like it. I like the dominant position.
You're a little alpha.
I like to perform in IMAX theaters. So then I'm doing the Comedy Works in April, beginning of April, and then Lehigh University.
Nice.
I performed there once with Sean O'Connor. Hey, Sean. Sean's another one guy. I've taken Sean on the road.
Yeah, Sean's a great old friend of mine.
We just did the Punchline in Atlanta last time.
Oh, nice. Yeah. He's a really funny comic.
He's a good dude.
We went on a real bad tour once where we performed at Lehigh. Two kids studying for finals. It was like the night before the finals started.
Well, they always, you know, it's the college, like the college have the planning committees and their kids, and they have to spend this money for their entertainment budget every year. And so they're just like, let's give the kids who are studying a treat and we'll just bring in
depressing.
Some comedy. But the kids studying, they do not.
They don't have time.
They don't want it.
They don't have time.
You are distracting them.
It was an entire campus of people quickly walking somewhere and just like miserable. Yeah. And I never
would you please shut up?
Yes, exactly.
I'm trying now. If I fail this, I'm going to die, man.
How much the semester is costing me?
Yeah, my parents... That's like the look on everyone kid's face. It's just it's cold and they're depressed and like it made me really happy I didn't go to college because I was like I don't want that life.
They're panicky because they realize they've procrastinated all the way up until this final and it's all on the final.
Kids are trying. Exactly. Kids are literally studying for their lives and you're like hey, queefs are funny.
Hey,
like, oh my god, they are. I don't need this class.
Farted. When's the last time you guys took a dump in your pants?
Hey, right. You know when you shit your pants. Come on, kid.
I know what I'm talking about. You do.
Hey, this kid.
You do.
This kid knows what I'm talking about.
This fat kid knows what I'm talking about.
I do. I really do.
Yeah, the only way they like can write a.
That was hilarious, Matthew.
Thank you.
This fat kid knows something. I do. I really do. That's amazing.
We have fun here, huh?
Oh, we really do. So Rob Riggle on Twitter.
At Rob Riggle.
Yeah.
Check it.
How the fuck am I not following?
I stopped trying to dazzle everybody.
Oh.
I got exhausted.
You're out of the honeymoon period with Twitter?
This is who I am now. It's like, you know, if something strikes me as funny, I'll tweet it. I do communicate through it, but...
I'm going to follow Rob right now.
I realized pretty quickly I wasn't going to be a career tweeter. I'm like, well, I'm going to go in and write my 10 funny tweets today and put those up tomorrow. And like,
there are people who do that, like Megan Amram, Rob Delaney. You'll see them just like, they'll work it out and they'll just have a bunch.
Yeah, and it works. You know, like, they're funny and people follow them, but I can't.
I have days where I'm like, this is a Twitter day, and then I'll do five.
It kind of like a feast of famine. I'll go a couple days without tweeting just because I'm busy or whatever, and then all of a sudden I'll find myself with some time and some thoughts. And it turns into just an ugly chain of stupidity.
Hashtag it's when a celebrity dies. That's when I fucking get the inspiration. I'm like, all right, Twitter day.
Yeah, see, I can't. I'm so much in the mode of like, I just want everyone to be happy that I can't take a strong stand on Twitter.
Chris Hardwick, Twitter, comedian second.
I'm with you. I don't. I'm with you.
Because it's just not worth the...
It's not worth the abuse that you get back. I misspelled a word. You would have thought I had killed someone. Right. I mean, they just unload on you. And you're like, please, honestly, get a life.
Yeah.
If you're going to critique grammar and a one misspelled word.
Yeah. Well,
I just posted an old picture of me and Jeslin from six, 7 years ago. And we have PBRs in our hands. Well, you're drinking PBR because 6, 7 years ago we were fucking crazy broke, and that's when you want 50 cents for a 12 pack, you drink PBR. And some guy just responded with something, 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 douchebag hipster with PBR.
Wait,
broke.
That was me.
How about that's a delicious beer at a quality price?
It's got the blue
hipster.
It
has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's just dumb. Yeah.
Got PX fucking, written all over it. PBR.
As far as like cheap beer for cheap beer that tastes pretty okay.
Yeah.
PBR,
my friend.
Especially out of a bottle. Ice cold out of a bottle.
Also Natty Light.
Yeah.
Natty Light's pretty good.
Natural you think so? Light.
Natty Light.
It's Anheuser-Busch. It's in the Bud family.
I've had bad next days.
I had these friends in college. They would buy Keystone because that was the cheap beer in LA. You'd buy Keystone.
Yeah.
And so they would, these were pretty like, preppy, prim, and proper kind of dudes, you know, study hard. But on the weekends, they would each drink a 12-pack of Keystone, and then they would become the Knights of Keystone, and they would take the empty 12-pack boxes and put them on their heads and run around the streets of Westwood going, "We are the Knights of Keystone!"
I just went to a party once where every kid that was there was like, they would drink a beer, and then when they would get the next beer, they would tape them together, and then they would have, they called it a staff party. Or it was just like a like large.
So they make walking sticks?
Walking sticks out of the beer.
That's kind of funny.
It was really funny, but I was like, I didn't understand. And then they're playing beer pong, and I was like,
hang on a second,
Jonah. I didn't go to college. I don't know what any of this is.
Candolph. So droll. How do I do it?
I don't know if it was a Massachusetts thing, but at the colleges, people would play Edward 40 hands, where
you have to
duct tape 2 40s to your hands, and you have to.
I saw that in a lot of skateboarding videos.
Edward 40 hands?
Edward 40.
You can't take the other one off until you finish both. And so that means you have to have 80 ounces of beer and you can't go to the bathroom.
Yep.
What if you just didn't understand and you actually cut some guy's hands off and you put them on like Vincent Price did?
Well, I think that would be, you know,
and then you died before you could give him the hands.
But he died partying, so.
Great party, though.
Great party.
Yeah.
Stay focused on
Why would giving someone scissor hands be a replacement for actual hands?
Did what you fucking
working
see
on the hand?
Fucking trims
but why,
he did.
But why scissors? Why sharp blades?
Better than needles?
No,
you're right.
Yeah, but why do they
better
have to be...
Better than porcupines?
No, but again, you guys are
better
picking
than
sharp
dildos.
Things.
Not
exactly.
Not
you guys never saw a little classic called Edward Penis Hands, which is an actual porn.
Wow.
From the 90s.
It's pretty, but they just did a Family Guy parody. They did.
I would have been a great Peter Griffin.
The trailer.
Who played Stewie?
I don't know the name of the actor that played Stewie.
Someone played Stewie? How do you play a baby who fucks people? Really?
I don't know.
Someone fucked people as a baby?
Listen,
I didn't see it.
We don't know. We didn't watch it.
Stop acting like you didn't see it.
Together? Oh, we watched it together. Hey, Matt, the new porn parody's out. Yeah, see you.
Hello, Boner.
Goodbye. I saw the Simpsons one, and it was off-putting.
Of course it would be.
Because when they do
yellow
the voices...
Yellow paint does not stay.
They colorize them.
Oh.
They color.
Then count me in.
Their color. I don't have weird. I don't need to fuck Lois.
No.
Or Marge.
Well, you could. That's the point. Thanks, porn.
Thanks, porn. This really went off the rails. This whole conversation, huh?
Let's just stop.
Sure wish I had my penis hands right now.
I can't. You're wearing headphones. I can't hear when you whisper.
I sure wish I had my penis hands right now. Jonah can't hear anything I'm saying right now.
I can read lips.
My mouth is covered by the microphone. Jonah can't.
wearing? No, I really
don't know. I don't know. And I don't think I care.
Jonah has greasy boners.
Now I'm getting upset.
What? What are you talking about? I wasn't saying anything. I was telling people to enjoy their burrito.
Were you really?
Jonah has
greasy. Done?
Jonah eats boners. What?
All right.
Yeah, we wrapped it up.
All right. All right. Fine. I guess that's it.
That was the weirdest start and the weirdest finish.
Yeah.
We haven't finished
a podcast. Awesome.
Yet.
I dig it.
Yeah, we're not done.
You're still talking.
What are you talking about?
We can't hear you.
Why?
We have to listen to
you're
it.
Yeah, listen. You don't listen.
Hear it.
Chris, you're being rude to our guests and more importantly to me.
He has a handsome fucking dick and you're doing this to him.
I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
We're not still recording. Rob, the movie is 21 Jump Street, but it's always a pleasure to see you at the UCB. And
yes,
I think,
it's always
and
good to see you.
Good
too.
To see you at the Improv. The last time I was late at the Improv.
That's right.
And thank you for doing the podcast.
Absolutely, thanks for having me.
Enjoy your burrito, slow, everyone.
Like, this is
it. Just evolves. Everyone's slowly filing out.
Thank just you got guys. His keys.
There goes Rob and Jonah.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
It's gonna
good to see you again.
Good to see you, Rob. Thank you.
And now it's coming back to me.
Yeah.
I do remember now.
Yeah, you got it.
I do. I really do.
Awesome.
Edward Penis Hands.
All right.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 15% off your new account for 6 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code Nerdist3.
Hey, listeners, it's Will Arnett. Our podcast, Smartless, has crossed a milestone that seemed unfathomable when we started nearly 4 years ago, as we've just released our 200th episode. Join us as we welcome the dynamic duo of hilarity, Steve Martin and Martin Short. You've seen them on screen together in The Three Amigos, Father of the Bride 1 and 2, and most recently, and only Murders in the Building. Both are comedic geniuses in their own right, but together they are always electric. And this episode of Smartless is no exception. I don't know if I've laughed more in a single episode than this one. We discuss their career arcs both separately and as a comedy team, how they met, who is more difficult to work with, and what motivates them today. Is Steve a better banjo player than Marty as a singer? Find out on this bicentennial episode of Smartless. Follow Smartless in the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Plus, you get to hear Sean cry. What a loser!